Hey everybody, Colin Morgan here, and welcome back to another episode of The Daily Grind. Today we're sitting down with Nick Bradley, who is a world-renowned business growth and scale-up specialist who helps exceptional business leaders unlock their full potential. If you're a business owner, if you're in business, this episode is for you. Nick is amazing. You guys are going to love this episode with Nick Bradley. Hey everyone, just before we jump into today's episode, as you would have heard a couple weeks ago in our last episode, I was doing a podcast course that I was giving away to 20 people for a discounted rate, which is going to show you how to make money with your podcast. This is a super unique opportunity that I'm doing. And exciting news, I'm actually turning this into an online course. So the online course is in the makes. If you want to get on the wait list to get the very first special rate of this online course, just visit my website and email me directly. That is colinmorgan.biz, colinmorgan.biz. Really looking forward to seeing you on the inside. Well, welcome back to the show. As I had mentioned, we're sitting down with Nick Bradley. Not only is he a world-renowned business growth and scale-up specialist, he's the host of UK's number one business podcast called Scale Up Your Business. Has over 100,000 downloads. He's had amazing guests, a lot of them that I've had on as well, so you gotta go check that out. Nick also works in private equity investors across the UK, US, Southeast Asia, leading business turnarounds, mergers, acquisitions, and scale-ups. Over the last decade, he has bought, built, and sold multiple businesses, creating significant value for himself and his shareholders. This includes enabling 22 business acquisitions, completing over $5.3 billion in deals across 8 business sectors in 11 countries. Nick knows what he's doing. Be sure, as always, you have a pen, piece of paper, sit back, and dive deep in today's interview with Nick Bradley. Enjoy. Well, Nick Bradley, welcome to The Daily Grind, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Colin. Really, really great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course, Nick. We're all super excited. And for those kind of listening, not knowing who you are, being introduced to you for the first time, if you wouldn't mind just kind of sharing a little bit as to who Nick is and what it is that you do.
Yeah, my thing, so to speak. Yeah, so the boring title was Business Growth Expert, right? But we can move away from that very quickly. I did 10 years working in private equity. And for people who don't know what that is, that's where you usually get sort of high net worth individuals. They put their money into funds, and then, you know, we go and buy businesses, grow them, scale them, combine them with other businesses, and then sell them, usually to create a lot of wealth for both investors and for entrepreneurs. So I did 10 years doing that, a massively fun ride, very Gordon Gekko from Wall Street-ish, which we can get into. But these days, I've jumped ship a little bit. I tend to work on the side of the entrepreneur. So I work with businesses that are already good businesses, but they need help. They need to be optimized. They need to grow quicker than what they're growing at the moment. And usually with a founder, with a leader, if you like, who has the intention of selling that business for 8 to 9 figures over a specified period of time. So I help them build that up, navigate all the way through to doing the deal, and then often celebrating with a bottle of champagne at the end.
Very nice. What made you make that transition? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, the world of private equity, if anyone's ever seen Billions, you know, help Bobby Axelrod and all that sort of stuff, it's kind of like that, right? It's pretty macho. It's pretty sort of linear and ego-driven. You can make a lot of money, but at the same time, you can sell your soul doing it. And I had a situation about 5 or 6 years ago where I was just running myself too much into the ground, and living a life full of stress. And I had a moment where I literally cracked all the teeth in the right side of my jaw one evening, just because we were closing a deal. And after that moment, I decided I needed to do something else, which was a little bit more balanced. So I went on my own journey to bring the skills of what I've been doing for private equity closer to entrepreneurs.
Interesting. And how long were you in private equity for?
Around about a decade. I mean, I was in and out of it in different ways. I had a corporate career before I got into the investment, but I wasn't, to be super clear, I wasn't like the finance sort of MBA dude who got a spreadsheet out. I was the guy that they put into businesses to do the turnaround. So I would often be like, come in there, look at the current leadership team, sometimes go in as the chief exec myself and effectively have to rebuild the business from the inside.
Got you. So when you like cracked your teeth on the right side, you kind of consciously made that decision, like, I need to do something else. What was like the first step? Did you, was it kind of like a, I'm quitting, I'm done right on the spot? Or did it kind of take time for you to get out of that role?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it was actually building up. So what was happening over time is I was getting more and more impatient and more frustrated with being in that environment. And the longer story, Colin, is like I was a bit of a sort of frustrated entrepreneur myself. I started my first business when I was 18. I sold it at 21. I then decided to run in the total opposite direction of entrepreneurship and go and work in the world of corporate. And I went and worked for Rupert Murdoch in News International for years. And so I was kind of like this guy who was kind of living this different world anyway. And anyway, so I started to kind of feel this sense of frustration. And then what sort of happened, and this is the kind of interesting pivot, if you like, my body was starting to show physical signs of this stress. And I wasn't being present at home with my kids. And I just wasn't a very nice person to be around. And so I had this situation where literally it's like being punched in the face. I got up in the morning, my jaw was swollen, went to the doctor, all sorts of stuff was going on. The dentist eventually said she'd never seen anything like this, other than another guy like me who was in private equity who was stressed to his teeth. And anyway, what happened was I called up a mate of mine who retired pretty early. He sold his shares in Love Film, which was sold to Amazon Prime. And I knew him from university. And he was always a bit weird. He was always the guy at university who we were out kind of hustling in pool halls and drinking beer. He just never came out. And it wasn't because he was studying. He was planning, right? And what he was really doing was doing personal development. He was doing a whole heap of stuff with Tony Robbins, and he was doing other stuff with John DeMartini, and he was working on himself. And I didn't know this, but after I had the teeth incident, I called him up and said, listen, man, you've always been really balanced. You've been successful. You've made money. You've helped others. You've always been really balanced. What is it? And he said, get yourself to a Tony Robbins event, right? And I was like, okay, are you serious? Like, you know, I read the books, but this is going to be cheesy as hell. Anyway, you know, egg on the face. I ended up going and doing it. And I realized that the path I was on wasn't what I wanted to do. Realized that I needed to get more balance back in myself personally. And that's when I made the decision. But all of this happened within about 2 months of the teeth incident. And I came back from Tony Robbins, gave up what I was doing in private equity, and then went off and started to do some other stuff.
Now, when you started to do some stuff kind of on your own, you got out of private equity, was there like a gap there? How long in between? Like, how long were you planning on kind of next steps for you?
So I made the decision when I sat in the Tony Robbins event in Chicago. So I live in the UK these days, but I flew to an event over in the US. But what I didn't do, and there's a lot of people who kind of hear this terminology, burn the boat, right? Which is the romantic ideal of like, I'm going to throw it all in and I'm going to have no plan B and all that. And I wasn't brave enough for that, right? I had, you know, after working in private equity for a number of years, you end up having big houses and nice cars and private schools, right? So I thought, I'm going to make the decision and then I'm going to have a very, very detailed plan of how I implement this decision. So it took me just under 12 months to build a totally separate set of businesses, including the stuff I do with my personal brand, that allowed me to build enough income to supplement what I would have been earning through private equity.
Wow. Looking back on that, like, there's a lot of people who are looking to kind of make that transition now themselves, right? Like, maybe they're in something they're unhappy with. They want to kind of break out. What would you say is like are some critical steps? I know you'd mentioned some planning and that went through a very, very long period of time for you to do that. But like, what were some other things that you found kind of helped you so that when you did start, you know, the transition was actually fairly quickly for you to be able to replace that income?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I had repressed, I think, for years, and it was probably ego-driven, if I'm really honest about it, Colin, was asking for help. You know, I kind of thought I knew everything, and I don't know where that came from. I think it was as a young guy, I had to prove a lot of things to people through various situations, so I was always trying to win. So the biggest change I made was realizing that I was going to a totally different place. So even though I'd said, you know, I was an entrepreneur when I was younger, I kind of fell into that accidentally. And now I was putting a lot more risk in terms of what I thought was risk at place, particularly with my family. So what I did is I started to go out there, and first and foremost, I crafted what I wanted my life to be like. So where do I want to live? What sort of financial situation, assets, How do I want to spend my day to a really granular level of detail, like, you know, dropping the kids at school, having this amount of time for exercise, time with my wife, all that. And then I started to look, I looked at that, and then I looked back at kind of the experiences that I'd had. So I came from a marketing and sales background, corporate, blah, 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 the private equity. And then I thought, how can I now bring these two worlds together? So I did all that myself. Spent a lot of time reading around that, and then wrote this stuff out, a bit like a manifesto. Mm-hmm. And then, because I'd spoken to my mate who'd had this big exit with Love Film, he said, now go and get yourself some mentors. And so I hand-selected a number of people in that first 12 months through referral, through just looking out there and seeing what was going on. And I went and effectively invested in that. Now, not a heap of money, but more money than I'd invested previously. And to be honest, that changed everything, because I got from A to B much quicker, because I didn't question it. I just listened, built it into what my manifesto was, and then just executed.
But you were very selective in terms of the people you were choosing to be your mentors and invest with.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Don't you find like that's a lot of people do invest their money? And to be honest, I've made that mistake. You invest your money with someone and then it's like, shit, they're not who they said they were.
Yeah. Particularly now. Yes. I mean, particularly now, I don't know how many online courses and 5-day challenges are happening right now. And everyone's everyone's a coach, you know, and all this stuff. And I don't tend to play like that in the traditional sense. But I made some mistakes too. I tell you what's interesting. Quite often what I thought I was investing to get ended up not what I got. But what I ended up getting in hindsight was equally as powerful, if not more powerful. And I'll give you an example of that. I invested in, so I have a mentoring practice, which is well into six figures, you know, pushing on seven figures, right? And I got some help to be able to craft that, because I didn't know how to do it. I mean, I knew that I could offer value to people, but I didn't know how to build a business off the back of that sort of information insight. And the initial investment that I made didn't teach me anything about the mechanics, the process, the structure, what I thought I was getting. It focused a lot on the identity of who I needed to become. But what was fascinating is the people that I met in that room, in that environment, have now become A, friends, but in many cases, partners. And they opened up other doorways. So the stuff I do with podcasting myself came from just putting myself in a different room and meeting other people. So now I look at it differently and go, perhaps what I'm trying to get is not the information. Perhaps what I'm really doing is just extending my network. And from those conversations and relationships is where I'm going to get the true value.
That's the secret right there, isn't it? Like, I think that, you know, specifically with podcasting, I think that so many people go into it with like this idea of you see a Joe Rogan or you see another person who's doing a podcast and you think it's going to be that. But the true value and what this is the networking. It's to be able to speak like to someone like you, Nick, whereas opposed to the people listening, you probably get a million emails, a million LinkedIn messages. How many people want to talk to you on a weekly basis, right?
Oh, good. I mean, you know, I did an interview with someone recently and I had 60 inbound messages on LinkedIn that day.
Yeah.
And I was talking about buying and selling businesses, you know, how do you do it without investing heaps of cash and all that. And it was a really interesting, it's a wealth creation strategy, right? It's basically what I did in private equity, but just making it a little bit more simplistic for people. But of course, right now, that message, connecting with people who are potentially losing jobs because of the environment and they need to, you know, reinvent and pivot, huge, right? So, but you're right. I mean, what I found is, and this is the biggest change. So if someone said to me, okay, who was Nick before that experience with the teeth versus after? Nick before was all about Nick, you know, to the point of like, I would have just stepped on anybody to get a promotion, to get a raise, to get a bonus, like, you know, really. And I look back and now I'm embarrassed, right, at what I was like, but I didn't realize. And then Nick afterwards is more about, if I can help people, and this is what I do every single day, if I can create something of value and put it out into the world, and I can serve someone and help them, if I can do those two things every single day, right, then my day is finished. And I've been doing that consistently now for 18 months, 2 years. But the return of that in terms of the opportunities that have shown up, exponential, something I would never, ever have thought of previously.
But there's, I want to kind of structure this in the right way. It's that mentality you had when you were in private equity is actually, you know, you have to have that little bit of that in you in entrepreneurship. And I'm not promoting like stepping on someone's throat and like kind of throwing people off to the side, but you have to have that hunger. You have to have that drive, that inner drive. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, entrepreneurship is difficult. I mean, it's difficult because of the level of uncertainty that is just, you know, to use a bit of a golfing term, par for the course, right? you can't go into that world without expecting the highs and lows of the roller coaster. Okay, so that's first and foremost. So what does that really mean? Well, it means you've got to be resilient. You've got to have a certain degree of grit, confidence. You've got to be able to understand the context of fear, right? And uncertainty again. And so what I learned from private equity, because it's not, I don't want to come on here and say that, you know, private equity is bad. It's not. I mean, it's a great ride. It's, if anything, the best thing about it is there is no ambiguity about as to why you're there. You know, you are there to increase value and make a return. There's nothing else, right? But that's also the pain of it. But to survive in that environment, you've got to have some edge. You know, it's not a place for people just to sit back and let things happen. You've got to be hungry, to your point.
Yeah, makes sense. So let's shift gears now to kind of what you do. So when someone asks, like, Nick, I mean, you kind of mentioned at the beginning, but what's kind of like the breakdown of what you do, what you help businesses with?
Yeah, so as I mentioned beforehand, I still work with investors. These days, I get brought in to focus mainly on turnarounds. Mm-hmm. So if a private equity firm has a business which has been, you know, this amount of money has been paid and all of a sudden it's not worth that anymore, it's kind of, Nick, can you just come and kick the tires on this and actually rebuild the bloody thing? So I do that. But it's a very different relationship now. The majority of my time, though, is with entrepreneurs, business founders, who have got businesses that have, as I said, they've grown to a certain level, they've had early success. And I often say that people who can start a business are not necessarily the same people who can scale a business. There's a very different point where the transition happens. And a lot of it's about who you then become as a leader. And sometimes those founders, you know, they can't make the step. So you see that with the Google example with Larry and Sergey, and then, you know, obviously they bring in people to do that for them. It's quite a common piece. But before we go there, it's best to understand what needs to happen. So what I do is I look at a business first and foremost through the lens of what a investor would look at. And there's six different things that I look at. And some of them you would have heard before, but it's the way that I try and look at it which makes the difference. And I assess the business through these six different lenses. While I'm doing that, I'm also unpacking, if you like, what that founder is trying to achieve. Because what happens, and this is the common pitfall, more often than not, it's not necessarily the business that can't do the marketing any better, or its operational processes aren't working, or it hasn't got, you know, the right financial gearing. That's not normally the problem. It's normally that founder has either lost passion for the business, has lost clarity of the vision of what they're trying to create. Quite often they're not talking to the market anymore, so they've got no idea how the market has changed. And then everything starts to become compounding on them. They start to become super stressed. They show up as a poor leader then. And then what happens is a bit like a house of cards. Once that important cog isn't working very well, the whole thing collapses. So even though I don't talk about it explicitly through the stuff I'm doing, because, you know, I talk about growth and scale up, often I focus on the mindset and I focus on the intention of the individual leading it, and I work on them as much as I do the business.
Interesting. And then when you're like diving into the business, like you've kind of worked on the entrepreneur, but then you're looking like internally at the business, how it operates. Are there some commonalities between where you see a lot of businesses making maybe similar mistakes?
Yeah, it's what happens with, and I'll go through the six lenses, the six peaks, as I call them. I mean, I call it the six peaks of value creation, which is a very technical kind of private equity term, but more often than not, businesses are sold on the ability to create value. And if I come in and I look at an information memorandum, or I get someone pitching, and I've had years of this, and I should probably say to everyone listening, I've sold three separate businesses through private equity. I was involved in a really big exit in 2017, which was in just over $2 billion. So I've been both through the process of scale up and then to the exit. So that whole point is quite an interesting journey. Now, the lenses are this. and they're, to your question, not every single one of them is broken, but usually there are two or three of the six which aren't optimized. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for that, that incremental improvement that when they all start to work together, it's like an engine that really sings, okay, mm-hmm. really hums along. So the first one is purpose. And it's really understanding two things. It's understanding that the vision actually exists and the vision is clear. And aligned to that, there's a really, really clear plan to enable that vision. So it's an A to B. Now, it sounds simplistic when I say this to you, right? And you go, oh, of course, everyone's got a vision and a plan. But you know what? They might have it start up, but then they hit a plateau. And guess what happens? They lose it. And instead of going back to the thing that got them the business successful in the first place or had it growing, they do the opposite. They dig in and they try and change things that don't need to be changed. What they should do at that point is step up. Okay, so that's the first thing, purpose.
Okay.
Second thing I look at is the profit, the profitability. And there's two parts here. One of them is very important in terms of the where we are today, which is this landscape of uncertainty anyway because of global pandemics. But the first thing is around cash runway. And there's a psychology that sits within each of these points, Colin. So the reason a cash runway is important is obvious. If you're running on vapor, you're not going to have the strength up here, the character here to be able to step up and look at the business from a different perspective. So I advise people to have at least 6 months. Minimum is 3 months. And what's happened recently, as I'm sure you would have seen, is a lot of people got caught, particularly smaller businesses, yeah. with not even weeks of cash. And all of a sudden, that's where the problems have existed. So there's two parts to this. It's that cash runway and it's a relentless focus on profitability. So a guy that you might have had on your show, a guy called Mike Michalowicz, I've had him on my podcast. He talks a lot about the profit piece, and that's very important, I think, with his book Profit First. So I'm a very big advocate of that. Third area is the proposition. And this is not just a product or service. So if you've just got a product or service and you think that's going to get you to the panacea of a really strong exit, then that's not the case. You have to have an ecosystem. And that's a way that ladders and brings people into your business. And when I talk about proposition, I'm often talking about the product and service and the experience that your ideal customer gets when they come in. And what I find quite often, and this is the watch out, is really good businesses have a very, very clear audience. So sometimes mm-hmm. called like, you know, a single avatar or persona, you would have seen this. Businesses that don't have that tend to be generalists. And I'm now coining that the death of the generalist. Like that, there's no way that can work anymore. Okay. So the proposition has to be about clearly identified problem that you can solve in that way. Then you get into the fourth area, which is probably the one that I work on the most, which is what I call predictability. And this is the one that as a private equity guy, you really want to see. And that's a predictable flow of the right customers driving recurring revenue. So arguably it's your marketing and your sales processes, but it's a little bit more than that because the two key words there are predictable and recurring. So you may know this, but businesses are only sold on two main metrics. One is recurring revenue and one is profit. Tech businesses that don't have a lot of profit because they're still building the machine, they're bringing customers in, can be sold on really large multiples of recurring revenue. So let's say, for example, you have a business, a technology business that's making $3 million in recurring revenue every year, you can sell that business for anywhere upwards of $30 million, 10 times as an absolute minimum. Okay, wow. As long as there's a few other things in place.
Yep.
So again, where's the problem here? Lots of businesses that I look at either haven't got the marketing or the sales component joined. So I've sort of thrown the term away, marketing and sales, and I just talk about customer acquisition now, to force the issue. To bring these things together, because both of those things have to be like left and right hand. Okay.
Yeah.
The fifth one is process, and process in terms of where you can start to bring in efficiency and automation. But importantly, if you think about a business in its simplest context, it's a product, it's a way of taking that product to market, and it's a way of fulfilling and delighting customers so that they become advocates and come back. And the point here on this fifth dimension is making sure that those things work together. So common for someone to have a great product, but a really poor go-to-market strategy, or a poor product, great go-to-market strategy. They can, you know, sell ice to the Eskimos, and yeah. then someone buys it and the whole thing breaks because some person in the factory decided not to build the thing properly. So So you've got to get those things working. That's a bit of a harder one and a little bit of a longer term one, but it's going through an organization and looking at the organizational structure, accountabilities, and the processes underpinning it. And then the last one, which is the crucial one, which everyone talks about, is the people piece. It's the right caliber, the right capability, underpinned by behaviors that are driving the culture. And this is an interesting one, because in startup, and I see a lot of founders get emotional here, Colin, they'll say, oh, employee one and employee two, employee three, they were really important, you know, blah, blah. I've got to protect them. They've got to have a job.
Gotcha.
The answer is no, they don't. The answer is, are they the right people that are going to get you to the next part of the journey? Doesn't mean that you have to be aggressive about this or anything. You've just got to be realistic. And I've seen, I mean, I've been very lucky to be involved in a couple of PE-backed businesses that have amazing performance-led cultures. And when you get the culture really working and you kind of get behaviors driving things as opposed to just values, words on walls, then everything starts to come together. So long explanation, but they're the six things. They're the lenses. If you can get all of those scoring highly, you are going to be absolutely flying. First and foremost, you're going to be growing. But secondly, you're going to be getting attention from people who really want to invest in your business, ultimately leading to an exit if that's what your ambition is.
Interesting. How long would a project typically take? Like, you go into a company, an organization, you go through those, you know, six lenses. How long does that typically take?
Yeah, so I always work on a 90-day cadence. Okay. And this is another thing.
Really
so
quick.
Yeah, years ago when I was in my corporate world, everyone had like 5-year plans, and then they became 3-year plans. And, you know, yeah, it's crazy to even think about it now. But the whole point being is that if you give yourself a year to get something done, you give yourself too much of a, too many excuses to have a week or two where it doesn't work. We're in 12-week cadence blocks, 90-day blocks. You don't get that. So I often say, I'll tell you how it works. I'll come into an organization, we'll do an assessment, we'll do a scoring, if you like, against those six drivers, those six peaks. And what will often happen is, let's say it's a score out of 100 for the whole thing. If you were getting in the 80s, then that's pretty damn good. Quite often businesses are going through the transition to scale up, are scoring in the 50s and 60s. So they're not broken. None of these businesses are broken. They're still good businesses. They're just not optimized. And what will happen is, if I go through the six, you'll get some that are scoring high, and then you'll get a couple. So let's say 2 to 3 out of the six, which are scoring low, some like spiral down to the 30s or 40s. So if we come in, first and foremost, we do that work first. Second thing is, we'll take those two and we'll improve those two within a 90-day block. So it'll take me 90 days to fix, let's say, the predictability piece. And the way I do that is not just by education, because it's every person I work with, and this is going to kind of slap in the face of all the online education programs out there, they don't want that. They want the result. They don't want to go in the back of the kitchen and make the spaghetti. They want to sit at the front of the restaurant and eat the bloody spaghetti with a nice glass of wine. They want it served beautifully on a nice plate with some silverware.
100%.
So we come in and do it. And then we leave it in a position. And that can sometimes be helping bring people in, employees, or bringing fractional support in. But we bring in high-level experts to get the job done at a high level of precision and at a high level of pace.
Interesting. How big of a team do you currently have, Nick?
Yeah, so we have across the core team that we have actually in the business, and I'm a big believer of this, is only 15 individuals. And then I have a network of around the world, mainly US and UK and a little bit of Southeast Asia. We have about 60 specialists in various areas. And then I have other companies that I have in partnership that I bring in. So if someone has a specific problem where they want to, say someone wants to build a personal brand, you know, that's quite an interesting one at the moment, because a lot of founders are saying, I now need to build this up, and they understand the importance of that. I have people who are specialists at building brand strategy, social media activation, content. So the first part of what we will do is build a plan. And sometimes people, that's all they need. They actually just need the strategy done for them. And then they can execute through their teams. If that's not all they need, then that's when I'll bring in experts, partners. But I quarterback the whole thing and make sure that if I'm engaged in these businesses, that, you know, it's not just say hello to Nick and then he walks off into the sunset. I don't work with many people in any given year, because think to what I said, I'm trying to help these people exit.
Yeah.
Quite often I get asked to be a non-exec, and sometimes I'm a chairman of two businesses, and quite often I get equity in these businesses as well.
Very cool. And how long, I don't know if I asked you, how long have you been doing this? How long did it take you to build up to where you are?
Yeah, so this particular area has been now about 3 years. And that includes, by the way, the 12 months of me making my, I'll share this with you, right? Because it's a bit of fun.
Okay.
So I made the decision, as I said, you know, sitting in a chair in the United Center in Chicago. What are the house that Jordan built, so to speak. That was cool because I'm a massive basketball freak. So there was a bit of a kind of serendipity around that. And I planned. And then I launched the podcast. I was still working. I was employed by a PE firm as a chief exec of a company. And I said to my wife, and she's like, you know, you're really, you know, you're floating close to the wind here because you're out there doing all this personal brand stuff. And I said, the day that the chairman, effectively my boss, calls me in and says you can't do the podcast anymore and you can't do all this stuff that you're doing is the day I'll quit. So I wasn't making any money per se deliberately. I was just building profile. And then eventually that day happened. And on that day, literally that day, I said, we're done. That's it. And then I'd already built a machine ready to go. And that's when I started to turn that more into a business from there. So that's a couple of years now.
Wow. That's a pretty cool story. To be able to do that.
Some people question it and go, oh yeah, but you know, how did you feel about your levels of integrity and all this because you're in that? Listen, I was still running the business I was working in.
Yeah.
I feel myself as being very fortunate because of what's happened with COVID, because I've got a lot of friends who have been in financial services for years and a lot of them have lost jobs in the last 6 months. And they're calling me up now saying, Nick, what did you do 3 years ago? And I'm like, I kind of had a realization, first and foremost, that A, I had to change things, but more importantly, I also realized that I needed to be more accountable for my own income. And I did the work around that. And that's the thing that I always justify. My most important thing is really making sure that I can provide for my family. And I knew that I had to make change for myself personally, but also just the way the world was changing. I had good insight, I think, and certainly good intuition that things were going to change anyway.
What would you suggest, like in terms of income streams for an individual person, how many make sense for someone? Because, you know, we're sitting here in a time where if you do have one income stream, you got hurt and you may still be hurting and it sucks, right? So like, what would you suggest be like the correct number, as many as possible, I'm assuming, but like, is there kind of like a thing to get started?
One of my mentors has 27.
Wow. Yep.
And a very high net worth. I've got 7. Soon to be 8. Well, I've got 7 companies actually. So, but from that, 8 separate lines of income. And that's taken a little bit of time to build. And some of them are quite diverse. So we've got stuff in Amazon, we've got stuff in housing and real estate, some in shares and whatever. But I often say, you know, first and foremost, start with another one. Start with another one, which is what I do, right? Start with another one and then do that. Because one of the things that kills entrepreneurship and really holds people back is focus, followed very closely by consistency. And one of the things I find entrepreneurs have, and you'll see this, is the shiny object. They just want to do everything. So I've said this to a number of people. Focus on one, get that working. Work out if you can get that secondary income stream to pay for all of your outgoings. Sometimes I call this vertical and horizontal income.
Yeah.
So you want that secondary income stream to almost be semi-passive. I don't believe in fully passive, semi-passive. And then all of a sudden, if let's say your outgoings are $5,000 a month, let's say, if that secondary income can pay for that, then you've got choice. And then you can either stay with your job or do something else or create a third income. But then you're not having to, you know, give your time for money, which is obviously one of the real watch outs for people.
Yeah, great piece of advice. Nick, if people wanted to learn more about you, connect with you, follow along on your journey, where's the best place people can go?
Yeah, sure. Well, first and foremost, listen to the podcast. If you've got a business and you're thinking, God, how do I scale that bloody thing? I'm in plateau land. Scale up your business. You can get that on all the usual places, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, et cetera. If people want to join my community, I've got the Scale Up Your Business community on Facebook, free community, a few thousand people in that. Really great group of people. We're very, very strict on it, which I think is a powerful thing. You know, it's there for the community to help others. So definitely join that. And the best place to get me, if they want to message me and say, hey, listen, what you said there was crazy and my mind's blown, LinkedIn, you know, look up Nick Bradley on LinkedIn. I try and respond to everyone as quickly as I can. I get a lot of people reaching out, but that's definitely the best way to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Well, I'll share all that in the show notes section of this podcast to make it super simple for everyone listening. And Nick, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your schedule, sharing your wisdom, dropping some knowledge. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, Colin, I'm very grateful for coming on the show. So thanks very much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, hit that subscribe button. Leave us a rating and review. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, everyone, as always, keep grinding.